News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Hope we can make your Saturday just a little bit brighter, a little bit warmer, because I know it's chilly out there, by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, if he hasn't frozen solid out there on Perdido Key, please welcome from the Pop Culture Denialist channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
22-degree weather? What is happening? Yeah. Not right now, but over the past week, it has been just chilly.
Not a fan.
So cold.
Not a fan.
No. I'm right there with you.
No,
so, I'm excited. We got a lot of stuff to talk about in the world of the award ceremonies in both movies and television. Something that happened in this last week that I think we should touch on is the Emmys. And then you had mentioned to me that we're going to be getting some Oscar nominations, so I know we're going to talk about that, as well as like DGA, SAG Award nominations, all of that kind of stuff. So
we are in the heat of award season right now. Despite the frigid cold, we're in the heat of award season.
Oh, and it's warming up. The nominees are heating up. Before we do get started, Julio, I know that both of us are music fans. We talk about it all the time. We love our bumpers because it gives you a chance to kind of showcase some of the music that means stuff to you. I am a huge fan of the band Tool, and in fact, I'm going to go see them in Birmingham next week. I think this will be maybe my fifth time seeing them. It's been about 15 years, but Tool fans, they've got quite a reputation. So just let me get your take on this. What do you think about Tool, and what do you think about Tool fandom?
I think they're a very talented band, obviously. I mean, you know, you listen to the stuff that they do, and it's very complex, and, you know, it's obvious that there's some real musicianship there and some real thought behind what they do. I'm not personally the biggest fan in the world. You know, I can kind of take it or leave it, depending on my mood. But, you know, I don't think it's as obnoxious a fan base as some other fan bases. Let me put it that way.
All right, let's get into it. What are the most annoying? No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
You know what I'm going to say. And you're not going to like what I'm going to say.
Hit me, dude. What?
It's Radiohead.
Yeah, okay. One of my other favorite bands.
And here's the thing. I don't dislike Radiohead. I talk a lot, blah, blah, blah. They're fine. Don't get me wrong. There's some songs I do like. And I told you a few weeks ago that I was kind of warming up to the song Karma Police after it was used in Invincible during this current season that we're waiting on part two of. There's something else that popped up. You know, I have the Spotify AI DJ running a lot of the times while I'm in workout mode. And there was something that came on a few weeks ago. And sometimes I just don't know what pops in, and then when I go look after to write down what I listened to that day, it'll pop up and say, oh, that was Radiohead. Okay, fine.
Yeah, nice.
I don't remember what it was, but there was something within the last couple of weeks. I was like, oh, okay, that was a Radiohead song. There is a certain segment, it's not all Radiohead fans, certain segment of Radiohead fans that act like Radiohead is God. And if you don't believe that Radiohead is God, you are an infidel, basically.
I kind of feel the same way about Tool. And as a Tool fan, I feel like the things that you said are pretty much non-negotiable. These guys are incredibly talented, technically musicians. Their fandom can be a little bit caught up in the esoteric side of it and the symbolism and the Fibonacci sequence and all of these things that really don't move the needle too much for me.
There's
a ton of
popular to semi-obscure side projects, also like Radiohead.
Yeah, a good call. So we've got Perfect Circle. We've got Pussifer. Also big fans of both of them. You know, I liked Maynard more before he started going on JRE. It's like, I didn't need to hear from this guy for that long. There was a mystique to Tool that's not quite there anymore because of these long form podcasts.
Yeah, and that's something I don't think I've seen Radiohead do, in fairness.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Now is there anybody in Tool is there anybody in Tool doing movie scores?
No, but little piece of trivia is that Adam Jones, the guitar player, was a special effects guy. He actually worked on projects like Terminator 2 and Dances with Wolves and other like big budget movies from the 1990s. So like they're really tied into the
So you do have a cinematic
I feel like
connection.
Storytelling.
You do have a cinematic connection, just not an Oscar nominated film score artist like Johnny Greenwood.
Right, or like more recently Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails and his collaborator Atticus Ross.
Yes,
I think
they've actually won a couple of Oscars. Johnny Greenwood hasn't won yet, and I actually really do like his film score work. I think he's actually deserved to win, but he hasn't actually won yet. There's a lot of people that have gone from like the popular music world into like film scoring. I think you know everybody kind of thinks of Danny Elfman when they think of that. Who amazingly does not have an Oscar, which
is bizarre,
insane, absolutely mm-hmm. insane. But does not have an Oscar. But Randy did all the Pixar movies. Why is his last name just
called? Randy Newman?
Randy Newman is somebody that started in pop music and then started doing a lot of film scores and has now won a few Oscars for that. Tyler Bates. Who did the first two Guardians of the Galaxy movies and has done a bunch of other movies. I think did Atomic Blonde, if I remember correctly. Really like his film work. Was in Marilyn Manson.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So there's another person whose film work I like a lot more than his band work. But,
yeah, I'd be curious to see if Tool does kind of dip their toes into that or members of the band at some point because it does feel like it would create really good synergy. Like their albums are very like soundscapes and very almost fundamentally like constructed the same way a lot of classical music is and stuff like that. I always found it so strange that they called them a metal band, but these categories are so arbitrary. And as we start to discuss some of the awards and what actual categories they went into, it just all makes me scratch my head, but, I guess that's a conversation for a little later.
And I think there is a cinematic quality to what Tool does, and I could see, like, the right filmmaker for the right project working with them, either the full band or one of them as somebody doing an instrumental score to do something with their music that I think would be really good. I get that there's a reputation for the fan base. I just don't feel like I get hit over the head with that the way I do with some of the other big, very dedicated, very single-minded fan bases out there. And there sure. are others. I pick on Radiohead a lot. There are people that could take what I said and immediately apply it to Taylor Swift. And
sure.
I mean, arguably, that is the biggest fan base in the world. Actually, inarguably, that is the biggest fan base in the world right now.
Would you say Fish is kind of one of those fan bases, or are they just so laid back that it doesn't come off as annoying?
I don't feel like Fish people necessarily try to evangelize. Now Dave Matthews Band people.
Yeah, for
that,
sure.
That's another story. I definitely think there's a lot of DMB heads out there that are preaching the gospel according to Dave. So
yeah, I think that's fair.
But I'm sure you say that about any band. There's every band has its like most devoted fans. Any band has, and anybody has that one or just a few bands that they would go, to great lengths to support or to see or to anybody that's any kind of serious music fan. I would say there's a lot of people for whom music is just background.
I don't get it, but that's true.
I have never been that person. I've been very devoted to music since I was a kid. Like it just is something that I have, obsessed over and has been a big part of my identity. And I think especially when you're growing up in the MTV era, you definitely, who you were had a lot to do with what genre of music you listened to.
Or vice versa. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely.
And that's changed maybe for the better, maybe for the worse. I've got a band that I'm a big fan of that I'm excited about. I'm going to play when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Hey, you! Don't watch that! Watch this! This is the heavy, heavy monster sound! the nuttiest sounds around. So if you're coming off the street and you're beginning to feel the heat, well, listen, Buster, you better start to move your feet to the rockin'est, rock-steady beat of madness. One step beyond!
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. I cannot wait. I am finally going to get to hear that live in May. I'm going to go to New York City and see Madness. I just bought my ticket. I'm so excited.
Oh, that's going to be great. That's going to be great. And you mentioned to me a couple weeks ago, you haven't been to New York lately, so this is an excuse to get up there, listen to some good music, and kind of check out the city again, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is just, you know, one of my favorite bands. First of all, they don't tour the U.S. very often. They're one of the biggest bands ever in the U.K., literally like 20 top 10 hits in a row.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's I believe that the record is tied between them and UB40. So more than
I didn't know the band. This is like something I got to check out.
Yeah, so more than the Beatles. In the U.S., wow. They get written off as a one-hit wonder, which is also a mistake because they had two top 40 hits in the U.S., not just one. But
what was the one?
Everybody remembers Our House.
Okay, yep, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Which is, I could have played that. I didn't want to play that. But they also had a top 40 hit called It Must Be Love, which is actually a fairly well-known song, too. It's been used in some commercials and things like that. Another song that a lot of people in the States don't think they know, but they do know because it was used in a very famous Colgate toothpaste commercial in the 80s. It's a song called Baggy Trousers. They changed the lyrics for the Colgate commercial, but if you heard that song, like, that's the Colgate commercial. So anyway,
I'll be looking into that.
Yeah, just an amazing band, and I cannot wait, man. I've wanted to see them basically my whole life. They don't come to the States very often, and when they do, it's usually like a handful of dates, and that's it. And that's exactly what's happening here. They're doing six shows in the U.S.
That's awesome.
Yeah, tied around. Whenever they do it, it's usually tied around them appearing at some big festival. So they're doing the Punk Rock Bowling Festival in Las Vegas, which I did look at going at. I thought about it, but... because there's a lot of other great bands playing that, but I just decided I wanted to see them as, you know, without a whole big festival scene. I wanted to go to it's at the Hammersmith Ballroom in New York. I bought standing floor, so I'm going to get as close to the stage as I can and just live in it, basically.
Nice, love it.
Yeah, super excited. Anyway, let's move on. We were talking about, we just had the Emmy Awards given out on Monday night, right after the Critics' Choice Awards were given out Sunday night, a week after the Golden Globes were given out the week before. So we are very much in the heat of award season. And it's been interesting. If you looked at what got the Emmy Awards, it looks a lot like what got the Golden Globes and Critics' Choice. That, like, the most of the major awards went to the same people.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because the Emmys were actually delayed by 4 months. The Emmys should have been given out in September. Their calendar year goes different than, you know, just a regular calendar year. And so these were voted on 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And the awards were due to be presented 4 months ago. So the eligibility period is such that, as a for example, the show The Bear kind of cleared out all the awards at the Golden Globes, at the Critics' Choice, and at the Emmys. However, at the Golden Globes and the Critics' Choice, they were being given awards for season two. The Emmys, because of the eligibility period, those awards were for season one of The Bear.
That's interesting. Let me ask you this. Does the date of the actual casting of the votes change as a result of this being pushed back 4 months, or were they already decided upon prior to that?
In this case, they were already decided on. Now, you know, if there are some other circumstances, sometimes they have, like with COVID a couple of years ago, I know the Oscars just delayed the whole process. But because the Emmys didn't know what was going to happen with the strike and everything, it could have been possible that the guilds and the producers had come to an agreement and didn't strike. That was entirely possible. Didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was possible. So they went forward like, okay, we're going to have this event. And then, nope, it's not going to be possible. We got to move it. So all the voting happened before the strikes, basically. And they couldn't actually have the ceremony until after the strikes because they couldn't have writers or actors, basically. So you don't have writers, you don't have actors. What do you have?
Yeah, right.
You don't have an Emmy Awards. I can tell you that right now.
No doubt. What did you think about the Emmy show itself this year?
I thought the show was good. I unfortunately missed probably the first half hour, 45 minutes, so I didn't see Anthony Anderson's monologue, but I did see most of the show. I know it's his whole thing to have his mom along to everything. I don't know that the mom being how they were going to play people off the stage worked, and I don't know if like going to her as often as they did worked, but I thought he was a good host. I really liked the cast reunion thing that they did. Where they'd have whole sets and everything, and not even some of them weren't necessarily cast reunions, but they'd have like a set made up look like American Horror Story Cheers. And have Dylan McDermott out.
Yeah.
They had the Cheers bar and they had most of the cast of Cheers out there, most of the surviving
Martin's
cast.
Apartment house or his apartment from the series Martin. That was all great. I got a little sentimental about that stuff. I mean, American television is just like such a intrinsic part of American culture, and by proxy just so many of our identities, that to like see the reunions of these cast members and just the way that they did it, I thought was really well executed. I also loved seeing the cast of Sunny all together and kind of joking about the fact that they didn't get a set and that they've never even been to the awards before. And
that was great.
Overall, I thought the show was a lot of fun.
That was great. And the bit where Danny, do you have one? Yeah, I have one.
Yep.
How long was Taxi on? 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Rhea's got four for Cheers. That was great. That was great. A lot of fun stuff like that. Still kind of mad about the In Memoriam because they left the producer Marty Croft, who was part of everybody's childhood. Sid and Marty Croft produced so many shows that we all remember, Land of the Lost and Sigmund and the Sea Monsters and the Bugaloos and H.R. Puff and stuff, and created the Banana Splits and, like this huge figure and an innovator in television. Not only that, was the producer of a lot of big variety shows in the 80s, most notably Donnie and Marie. I don't know how they left him out of the In Memoriam. And I mean, like they had like camera operators in there. It's like,
I didn't notice that. That's bad.
And I'm not saying the camera operator doesn't deserve to get recognized. Don't get me wrong. Everybody deserves to get recognized. But I just don't know how they left that dude out. I could say, there's some people that might say, so much of what he did was daytime and it was for kids. He should be honored at the daytime Emmy Awards. Well, they had Bob Barker in there.
Yeah.
You're telling me Bob Barker's career wasn't daytime?
Yeah.
So, that just left a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. But other than that, I thought it was a good show. Wholly unsurprising in most of the awards, however.
I will say, and I agree with that, there's a whole conversation to be had about how shows will just simply sweep and whether or not that makes for good television or whether it should just be kind of spread out just for nature of entertainment, though that's not what the primary purpose of these award shows is. But to that point, you know, when I mentioned a couple of my favorite shows of the year, they were all on there. Yeah. Fargo wasn't eligible for the time that it came out. And so the consensus, I feel like, really does represent some of the best TV that we've gotten. I hate the fact that when I was talking about, you know, some of my favorites, that Better Call Saul didn't come up in my conversation, because that's one of the greatest shows that I've ever seen. But I'm not sure that it even aired in 2023, to your point about the eligibility period. So that one was a little bit like out of sight, out of mind, hadn't thought about it in a while, but it's very good.
Well, you know what? Here's a stat that I read the other day. Better Call Saul had something like 65 nominations over the course of the series and did not win a single Emmy.
It's offensive. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're a fan of that show, and even if you're not, just knowing the reputation of that show, that's pretty crazy.
It's very crazy. Bob Odenkirk as Saul Goodman is just one of television's greatest characters. So
It's going to end up being, you know, seen as one of those all-time great roles that it's incredible to believe that the actor never won an Emmy for it. Alongside Steve Carell never winning for playing Michael Scott on The Office. Amy Poehler never winning for playing Leslie Knope on Parks and Recreation. You know, there's a few like that we can point at and be like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
It's weird to me, though, that they put Succession in drama and The Bear in comedy, because either of those could really go either way. It's great that both of them got a little bit of notoriety for it, but like, that line of humor and drama is just a very murky area that I'm not real sure how you categorize it one or the other.
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion about that. There's a lot of people that are starting to say, well, maybe there should be a dramedy category, or, you know, or something, that there's not a lot of traditional ha-ha laughs in The Bear, and there is a lot of laughter in Succession. It is a satirical show. So I don't know, you know, maybe they start dividing it into a half hour program versus an hour program or something like that. But those kind of arbitrary time lengths have gone out the window with streaming too. So
that's a good point.
I don't know. I think you got to let people classify things how they're going to classify them, or just don't have a category and give out less awards. And I don't think that necessarily works either. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. You got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Days keep rolling by. Just trying to keep your head up, lifted to the sky. When you get down, just dance all around like you're a child. I'll never let you get too low.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. That is one of the songs we might hear listed as an Oscar nominee coming up when the Oscar nominations come out on Tuesday. That is called Keep It Movin'. It is from The Color Purple, the new version of the film that has just come out, the musical version based on the Broadway musical. I haven't seen this movie yet, I have heard some buzz that it's not really an adaptation of the Broadway musical either, that it kind of goes its own way as well. Have to let people who've seen both be the judge of that, because I haven't seen either one. But, you know, there's been some buzz about this maybe being a contender for some awards, but I think original song seems to be one of the more likely categories for it. It's a good opportunity for us to talk about what we might see coming out of the Oscar nominations on Tuesday morning when they are announced on Good Morning America by Zazie Beetz and Jack Quaid, which Seems like a little bit of an odd couple to me, but what do I know?
They both look great. I'm sure they look great together.
I like both of them as actors a lot. Neither of them has ever been nominated for an Oscar to my knowledge. Jack Quaid was in a movie that's going to get nominated for a whole boatload of Oscars, but it was a...
Scream 6?
No, five? No. That would have been eligible last year, not eligible this year. he had a small role in Oppenheimer.
Mm-hmm.
Which he was great in, but it's a very, very small role, so it's not anything that's going to be like even up for supporting actor or anything like that. But Oppenheimer surely is going to, I would say, is the odds-on favorite to get the most nominations at this year's Oscars. I think just judging by what we've seen in the preliminaries with the Golden Globes and the Critics' Choice, what we've seen come out with the DGA nominations, the SAG nominations, the BAFTA nominations. There's no way that this is not at least one of the most nominated films at the Oscars this year, if not the most nominated film at the Oscars. I think it will probably be the most nominated film, which I think is very deserving. I think it's, if not the best movie of the year, it's either. And I know we just a couple weeks ago did a show where we went through our best movies of the year, and I had Oppenheimer on the top of my list. But I did see Poor Things last night, finally opened in Pensacola. And man, for me, they're neck and neck. So Oppenheimer is either my number one or number two. Poor Things is either my number one or number two. I haven't quite decided yet. But
Lanthimos picked up some awards, including Best Picture for The Favorite a couple years ago. It's been a couple years by now, maybe even 2019.
Well, you didn't win Best Picture at the Oscars.
It didn't?
No, The Favorite didn't win Best Picture at the Oscars.
What won that year? Whatever. I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I guess my question is, do you think the fact that he was so critically praised for The Favorite a couple years plays into whether or not he ends up, walking away with an Oscar this year? Do you think that people don't consider those kind of things when they're voting?
Oh, I mean, there's all kinds of political things that get taken into consideration when you're talking about these awards, because they are voted on by people. In the end, these are all people. They're going to be susceptible to voting for their friends. They're going to be susceptible for voting based on their politics. They're going to be susceptible for voting on who deserves it, because they've had a long career and they haven't gotten one yet.
Right.
All that kind of stuff is certainly out there as possibilities. We'll get into the weeds on this and kind of see where we are. But we could start with Best Director. That's fine, because I think that Yorgos Lanthimos is going to get nominated for that. He is the director of Poor Things. I also think Christopher Nolan is going to get nominated for Oppenheimer. I think both of them are pretty much locks. I think you definitely have a lock on Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon being a nominee. And I think, even though to great surprise she was not nominated for the BAFTA for Best Director, I think Greta Gerwig is pretty much a lock for being nominated for Barbie. So I think, the four of those are probably locks for four of the five nominations for Best Director.
Okay.
Now, on the fifth is where we come into question mark. If you look at the Directors Guild and who they nominated, the fifth one went to Alexander Payne for The Holdovers. Very well-regarded movie, very well-regarded director, certainly been nominated before, is well thought of. But the Oscars don't always necessarily match the Directors Guild on the nominations. And I think there's a chance of maybe Jonathan Glazer sneaking in there for The Zone of Interest, which has a lot of buzz, or Justine Triel for Anatomy of a Fall, foreign movie. There's a couple other outside chances out there. Maybe Celine Song for Past Lives, maybe Bradley Cooper for Maestro. But, I think you've got the four locks, and then I think the fifth one is a little bit up for grabs. What do you think?
Yeah, I think your shortlist is probably spot on. And having only seen a couple of those movies, there's like Alexander Payne, I think, did a really great job. Of course, Scorsese and Nolan, anytime they're in the conversation, there's a real possibility that they're going to be the ones chosen for Best Director, because it is a voting body, because these are people who are just industry titans. But if I had to kind of just go based on my gut feeling, I feel like Lanthimos has probably got a really good shot at Best Director this year.
I think it's Nolan's year. I think it's going to be one of those where they've decided it's time for him to win. He's winning everywhere else. I really think it's going to be Nolan's year.
I'd love to see it. It was a great movie.
Yeah. Now, when we get down to the acting awards, I think the only one that I feel like there's even really, as far as the nominations go, I think that we've got a pretty solid group of what the nominees are going to be that I think are going to be. We'll start with Best Actress. The race is really a two-person race. It's between Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon and Emma Stone for Poor Things. The two of them are definitely getting nominated. Without any doubt whatsoever, they will be nominees for this award. Lily Gladstone has been cleaning up left and right, and it's a great performance and certainly deserving, and there's just a great story there. But did not get a BAFTA nomination. Again, a huge surprise that Lily Gladstone did not get a BAFTA nomination. Emma Stone has won this award before. She won for La La Land a few years ago. So that may weigh in the factor of, well, let's give it to Lily Gladstone because Emma Stone's already got one. But man, this performance in Poor Things is just something else. I forgot I was watching Emma Stone watching this movie.
And I'm excited to see it. Haven't had a chance to see it yet. I feel like the bigger story is the kind of shaggy dog. Well, hate to use that metaphor, but the kind of underdog story of Lily Gladstone making her way into this conversation. And I feel like that headline reads a little bit better than Emma Stone winning it.
I do too.
And as you said,
and this is
in politics, so we'll see.
Yeah, this is a place where politics are going to come into play, where there's going to be people that are going to be motivated to try to do what they think is the right thing. Hollywood is still pretty liberal. Yeah, there is the friend game too, and I'm sure Emma Stone has a lot of friends. One of them's Taylor Swift. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
So, in talking about rounding out the category here, the people that I think are going to get nominated, but probably not be in the winner conversation, I think your other two nomination locks are probably Carey Mulligan for Maestro and Margot Robbie for Barbie. I don't think either one of them has a shot at winning, but I think they're pretty solid shots for nominations.
Yeah, good pick.
And then your fifth nomination, I think there's a possibility for Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall. That movie is very well regarded. Haven't seen that yet. Some buzz for Greta Lee for Past Lives, Annette Bening for Naiad, and Fantasia Barrino maybe with an outside chance for The Color Purple. So I think all of those are in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But we get down to Best Actor, and this is one that I started thinking was again going to be a lock across the board, that I knew who was going to win this everywhere. But then we got a little bit of a curveball thrown at us with the Critics' Choice last week, giving it to somebody else. So I'd say your two locks for this nomination are absolutely Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer and Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers. Now,
yeah.
Murphy won the Globe. Giamatti won the Critics' Choice. When we're looking at the SAG Award nominations in this category, both of them are nominated. I think it goes down either one. Now, the actors is the biggest voting body in the Academy. So when we see the winner of the SAG, that may give us a good clue as to who else is going to win the Oscar, but not doesn't always match up. Other nominees likely in this category: Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction, which also just opened here in Pensacola. Those are also all the SAG nominees. So those are all pretty strong possibilities, I would say. One of those probably going to get left out, but we'll see. There's also an outside chance for Andrew Scott. We got to take a break. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
This one is from my one and only true love, Princess Peach. Peach,
you're so cool.
And with my star, we're gonna rule. Peach, understand, I'm gonna love you till the very end. Peaches, 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 peaches. Ah, oh yeah, ah. Peaches, 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 peaches.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube. That's a song you're unfortunately probably not going to hear nominated for the Oscars because it did not make the short list of potential Best Original Song nominees, despite making being a nominee at the Golden Globes and the Critics' Choice Awards. Peaches from the Super Mario movie. Now, there may be a chance that we'll get the on Best Animated Film nomination for the Super Mario movie, but don't think that's going to be the winner. But let's move on. I wanted to give you a chance, Jeremy, first of all, to remark on the Best Actor race real quick.
So, look, it's a three-person race as far as I'm concerned. You got the schnoz with Bradley Cooper. We got a big prosthetic schnoz on there. You got Cillian Murphy, prosthetics, sans prosthetics, right? He's playing, like, three decades probably of the same character with minimal makeup and just some good costuming choices. And then you've got Paul Giamatti doing the best cockeye of any thespian that you've seen in the history of film before. And, it's funny that each of these guys has like a pretty distinct gimmick in their performance, but that shouldn't take away from what they're doing. Honestly, to your point, I think this is a two-way race. I think it's between Giamatti and between Cillian Murphy. I think both of them are so incredible as performers. I think
both with very long and under-honored careers. Giamatti's only been nominated once before, and it was for Cinderella Man.
What a wild choice,
yeah.
Because he worked with Payne in Sideways all the way back in 2004, which is another really well-regarded performance. I, having seen both the movies, give it to Cillian Murphy. I think it was a career accomplishment, and it gave him an opportunity to shine in a way that I don't think I've ever seen before, despite acknowledging he's one of the best of our generation.
Yeah. Really quickly, moving to the supporting categories, which more or less seem like a lock. Best Supporting Actress, Divine Joy Randolph, has been picking this up everywhere for the holdovers. I think is far and away the likely winner in this category. Other possible nominees include Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Jodie Foster for Naiad, Julianne Moore for May December. There's some outside hope for America Ferrera for Barbie, Penelope Cruz for Ferrari. Penelope Cruz did sneak in for the SAG nomination, so that's one to, she's kind of a favorite, so one to keep in mind out there. But I think it seems like Divine Joy Randolph has that wrapped up. As far as Best Supporting Actor, we've got kind of a similar story where Robert Downey Jr. has been winning it left and right for Oppenheimer. This category seems like it's a lot more of a lock on the nominees. Ryan Gosling for Barbie is definitely going to be a nominee. Robert De Niro is definitely going to be a nominee for Killers of the Flower Moon. Mark Ruffalo is definitely going to be a nominee for Poor Things. And I think there's a good chance that we get two nominees from Poor Things, with Willem Dafoe getting in there as well. Possibility of maybe Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, who did make the cut in there for the SAG Awards. So that's a possibility. I really think that Downey is likely to walk away with this award, but I'm a little less secure on that than I was on Divine Joy Randolph. I think there's an outside chance for Gosling or for Ruffalo to sneak in there and take that from him.
This is a category I have absolutely no idea about. I haven't seen the majority of the movies listed there. I guess I'll answer the question with a question. If you were going to give it to Ruffalo or Defoe, who would you pick?
If I was going to give it to Ruffalo or Defoe instead of Downey?
For Poor Things, if you were just saying, okay, we've got these two people, who one of them could be nominated, which would you have put in there?
Ruffalo.
Okay.
Despite the fact that Defoe is great too, and he is a great actor, and again, somebody that has been under-honored over the years. I think I also think that Downey's probably going to take it.
I agree.
Let's move on to Best Picture before we run out of time. You can kind of look at director as kind of an indication of this. You know, the nominees for director are almost certainly going to be movies that are being nominated for Best Picture. So Oppenheimer, a Best Picture nominee lock. Killers of the Flower Moon, a lock. Poor Things, a lock. Barbie, a lock. Holdovers is probably a lock. Zone of Interest is probably a lock. And then you get into what else could get in here. We're going to have 10 nominees.
Quantumania.
Yeah, that one's probably not going to make it. We do have the 10 nominees is the rule these days. So this is where you might see Maestro sneak in. You might see Past Lives, Anatomy of a Fall. Maybe Color Purple on the outside has a chance. Maybe something like Air, which was very well received, but it's been a long time since that came out. Maybe an animated film like Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse sneaks in there. That's also a possibility too. I mentioned the Directors Guild Award nominations already. Those definitely come into play. You also want to look at, with the SAGs, you want to look at, there is an award for Best Ensemble, which is kind of their equivalent for Best Picture. So with the SAGs, those went to American Fiction, Barbie, Color Purple, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Oppenheimer. So a couple of those locks not in there. Holdovers not in there. And I think Poor Things didn't make it in there either. So
interesting.
Yeah, a lot of individual nominations, but didn't get the ensemble nomination, which is interesting. You got anything that you think is maybe an outside chance of getting nominated that was not mentioned there, Jeremy?
I think that you nailed a lot of the ones that I would have probably picked as outside nominations. Air, I think, is an interesting choice. I wonder if it was a little too far back to slide in like that at the last moment, but I do have a feeling that the lock for win is probably the same between the two of us.
Well, and it's interesting that before we go on to that, it's interesting that Saltburn has kind of fallen out of the conversation. Like, there was a lot of buzz about that movie, and there's been a lot of people talking about that movie, and it's been nominated a lot at the BAFTAs, but also a lot at the Globes and the Critics' Choice, even though it didn't take home anything. But it's really not up for anything really at the SAGs. It's not up for anything at the DGA. And I think it's kind of starting to fall by the wayside, which is, I know it's a polarizing movie. I have not seen it yet myself, but it seemed like it was one that was going to be in that conversation that just kind of fell off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. I think, there was also some talk on Napoleon early on, but I think the interest in that has completely died out, which, frankly, I kind of think is justified. I don't think that movie was as good as I wanted it to be, or as it wanted to be, for that matter. I think the popular consensus here is Oppenheimer for Best Picture.
Yeah.
However, that being said, the other thing I always like to remind people when we're talking about Best Picture, I mean, nominees are one thing, and we'll find out the nominees this week, and we'll kind of see how good we did when those come out. But it'll be a couple of months before the actual Oscars are given out. Remember that every other category besides Best Picture is just a straight vote. You have 10,000 people voting. Whichever one of those movies gets the most votes wins. However, Best Picture is a ranked choice. So people don't just go in there and vote for one movie. They give you the list of, they rank them from 1 to 10. And they go through, and if nothing has more than 50% of the vote, they drop off the one that has the least votes, and they go back and start adding in those voters' second choices. And so I think that's been why in the past few years there's been some places where there have been kind of surprises, or maybe movies that were not necessarily front runners, like, oh, I'm looking at you, Green Book. Where it was probably a lot of people's second choice, and that was enough to put it over the top. So If we get into that situation happening here, do we see Killers of the Flower Moon maybe, or Poor Things, or Holdovers, or maybe even Barbie?
I feel like the Academy wants Poor Things to win, but that it just would be really difficult for anybody. And I mean, even you seem to be struggling between which of them is the two better films. But like, you know, Oppenheimer is a cinematic achievement, and also The Favorite lost to Shape of Water back in 2018. So like, the Academy loves Yorgos. I don't know if it ends up overtaking Oppenheimer, but that really is the race, right?
I mean, I think you got to have Killers of the Flower Moon in that conversation too. But
yeah.
But I mean, yes, Oppenheimer is a cinematic achievement. I'm here to tell you that Poor Things is as well. It's not just the acting. It's not, it is a absolutely unique, one of a kind story. It is incredible production design. It is the world that is developed in this movie is just this incredible science fiction fantasy world where anything is possible. The design, the costuming, the art design, it's an incredible looking movie. The cinematography is fantastic. Everything about this movie is peak quality. I can say the exact same thing about Oppenheimer. Everything about Oppenheimer is peak quality. Poor Things is a little bit shorter. Not a lot, though. It's like 2 hours, 20 minutes. So it's not, you know, Oppenheimer's a little over three there. Killers of the Flower Moon's about 6 weeks long. So I don't know. We will see. But the nominations will come out on Tuesday. And when we come back next week, we'll kind of do a little scorecard and see how we did. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.